This is Radio Kate, and I'm here in Qatar, and we're just at the Qatar Science and Technology Park. It's an amazing building, as many of the buildings in Qatar seem to be. A huge, big, brand new, shiny, amazing architecture. And I've just managed to collar somebody who sounds kind of interesting, and it's Rosalind
Reed.
Rosalind Reed, sorry, I'm really bad with names. I think it's just one of those conference things. So tell us where you're based, what you do, and what brought you to Qatar today.
Well, I'm based at Harvard University in the States. I'm here because I'm involved with the Council for the Advancement of Science Writing in the U.S., and we're just promoting science writing and science communication generally. We're sponsoring some sessions, and I'm doing a session on the future of the science magazine. And that's why I'm here in Qatar, but it's really fun to look around and find out what's going on in Qatar. Who knew?
Well, I certainly didn't. It's a very interesting place. There's lots of buildings and very few people, is as far as I've got with my thoughts. But I'm sure there's more to be seen.
Indeed. And we're here to learn about science and technology. And there are lots of people around who may be doing science and technology, but I guess we go to touch screens and figure out what they're doing.
I think we'll track them down and get some stories. So the future of science magazines... Wow, that sounds like an interesting one, because, I mean, we keep hearing doom and gloom for print media. Is that the case for specialist magazines?
Absolutely. A lot of them have already failed. But that doesn't mean it's doom and gloom for the magazine. The magazine needs to recreate itself in the digital age. The concept of a magazine is a very rich kind of periodical with a lot of reader service elements in it, so that you can express that idea in the digital form. I think most magazines haven't figured out how to do it. It didn't work very well on the web, but with all the new devices, tablets, and so forth, we can probably find a new model for the magazine. That's what we'll be talking about.
And do you think the new model is going to involve paid content? Because we found, certainly in the UK, like people have put, The Times has put a paywall up, and so you can only access its content once you've subscribed. And I'm not sure how well that's working with more general news, but things like the Financial Times have been very successful because they offer, you know, that specialist content. Is that the sort of model you would be aiming for?
Well, with these personal devices like iPads, there is a pay model, but it's a different pay model than the web. So we finally have a way to think about subscription to something very interesting that you get on a personal device. I have the concept that, and it's borne up by research, that people like to dive into these devices rather than surf as they do on the web. So they're very personal devices that you interact with, and there's research showing people are willing to read for much longer times on these devices. So the magazine may come back.
So just in an electronic form with kind of richer content, I guess, because you can then link to more sources. And I mean, are you looking at different ways of expressing those stories? Is it all going to be on the written word, or there'll be more emphasis on adding audio or video to bring those stories to life?
There'll be lots of rich content, because you can have, on an iPad, obviously, you can have a mixture of content that the individual determines, you know, the standard mix. And some of it might be, you know, could be video, could be rich media of all kinds that is mixed in with the print. But narrative is the name of the game here. The magazine is ideally a form for narrative types of expression. However, it's also something that usually brings in things like puzzles and reviews, some things that could be a little more participatory. So a magazine is a bit of a mélange, and I do think people would pay to subscribe. There's already some evidence that they do if they can get it on their personal device.
It's interesting you mentioned narrative, because I've been hearing all day long the power of the story and you know how important that is, especially as journalism is, it's changing slightly. You know, anybody can break a story on Twitter, but it's for the science journalists to then give the context to filter it out and to weave the, you know, the richer tale, I think.
Right.
So just before we started recording this, you were mentioning some of the students that you're working with.
Right.
And you mentioned robo-bees. I can't let you go away without asking a little bit about robo-bees. What are they? Are they literally robot bees?
Indeed, literally.
Amazing.
They don't exist yet. Well, there are robot bees, but they have to be tethered to a power source, and they have to be controlled through the tether. So the big problem is the power. You know, we have these batteries. You would need a AA battery to power a little bee. B bee can't carry a AA battery around. Yeah.
So you basically got little robot bees on bits of string flying around. That's amazing. Yes. What are they for? Why are they doing that?
Well, it's an exploration in understanding some of what nature does and what might happen computationally. So there's a big issue. For instance, there are some computer scientists involved in the project who are thinking of the robo-bees as sort of a super organism, and what kind of operating system, if it couldn't have computing on each of the bees, have it think, what would this super organism behave like? What sort of operating system would you have? So this is a new concept in computing. Instead of a network of independent or controlled devices, you might have them be one sort of big system. And so those concepts are expressed in beehives and might be very interesting concepts in technology. So
I'm just thinking of possible uses for robo spy bees or swarms of those going in and you wouldn't need James Bond anymore. But, this is just the way my mind works.
Indeed. No, they could actually do some work. So there is a practical application. You could have them handling pollination if they were good enough. And, they'd be reusable. You would have a swarm of bees and you could sort of send them exactly to your field and have them pollinate in exactly the time you want them to and so forth. A little more controllable than bees.
But without getting stung as well.
Without getting stung, yes. But not this is not actually thought to be a likely sort of outcome, but it's something that we can learn a great deal through. It's a great project for students, very involved. The students are very involved in building these bees and learning also about the mechanics of flight.
And if we want to find out more, where is this research being conducted?
At Harvard, and there is a RoboBees website.
So. That's great. We'll look it up. Thank you so much.
Oh, sure.